I can't remember. Do you want to view the camera?
See, that you asked this last time while it was recording, so I'm going to leave it recording this time. You can talk to me, because the camera, it's not ready to... AI is not there yet. How are you doing, man?
Lucy? I'm well, thanks.
Good. Last time we chatted was when you released Async to the world in CTP1.
Yeah.
And now we're going to talk about CTP2 and a lot of the work that you've done. Hopefully we'll go a little deep and see kind of like state of the compiler, the amount of work you had to do, bugs that you fixed. Take it away, Lucian Wilczek. Did I say your name right?
You didn't, but that doesn't matter.
Oh, man.
Okay. So the main thing I wanted to get to was, I mean, the important news with this new release is that we've got an as-is license. That means it's a CTP, it's unsupported, it's used at your own risk. However, we're letting people use it in their deployed or marketplace applications. This is pretty unusual for us, and the question is, why are we doing it? And the answer is, we recognize for some people that using an unsupported pre-release technology preview for async in some cases might be less bad than the alternative, which is writing the spaghetti code that they'd otherwise have to do. Mm-hmm. But the question that the audience will really want to be knowing is, how can they make an informed judgment about the risks? How can they know if it's safe to use? I wanted to talk, therefore, about some of the things that we have fixed and some of the things that we haven't fixed.
Okay. So let's do that.
Yeah. Okay. Now, just to get out of the way, there are some unimportant... some things that... There are some very important things that won't affect the quality of your generated code. Things like IntelliSense and IDE support. Uh-huh. These are not in the CTP yet. They're going to go in the full product, of course.
Sure.
But I want to focus in on the actual correctness issues that people should pay attention to.
Okay.
We fixed some pretty gnarly bugs that were actually reported to us by people using the first CTP, and we really appreciate that. They were reported to us by email and Stack Overflow. And if any people find more bugs, we'd really want to hear so that we can fix them too. These bugs were to do with race conditions. Can I write on the board?
Of course you
can. Can I get that?
Thank you.
I'm going to write some in C# and some in VB. That's because we think in both languages all of the time. I know your audience will be thinking in one or the other. If I have an async method and an async task returning method, it has a try block, maybe it's got an await in here, and then a return statement, and a finally clause, console.write line of finally. I'm writing this out because there was a lot of Stack Overflow discussion about the old behavior, and people were saying, oh, the old behavior, maybe it was design, maybe there's something mysterious about async methods. Mm. There wasn't. What was the old behavior in this? The old behavior was that if someone had an await statement, and then maybe they could var I equals console.write line of I, the old behavior in the first CTP was that it would actually print the result of I before executing the finally body. Mm. That was definitely wrong.
Okay.
The change we've made it is so that it really does execute the finally bodies now.
Perfect.
There were other bugs to do with finallys. A race condition in the compiler-generated code, which led to sometimes finally bodies not being executed at all, and we fixed that.
Hmm.
We're not aware of any further issues with the finally bodies.
Interesting. Now, just may I ask, the race conditions happening because... Can you explain a little bit about why that would be? Since
I'd really love to do that.
Great.
Let's talk about it by how we rewrite this method. And I mean, for the entirety of this talk, I want to get deep into the nitty-gritty of how the compiler transforms this method, because advanced users will need to know that.
Great.
In some cases. The return statement actually got translated. In fact, the entire method got translated into a class which represented the async state machine of the method. And inside here, it had a method called move next. And the entire body of this got transplanted into the move next method. The idea behind it was that we'll call move next, it will do the first chunk of work, then at the await point, it would return out. Later on, once the await thing had finished, it would come into move next, and it would resume where it left off. Now let's think about how we translate the return statement. The return statement I should have mentioned this. There's a field in the state machine called builder. This is the guy, its actual type is async task method builder of int. And this is the guy, he lives in system.compiler.runtimeservices, is the guy responsible for actually creating the task object. When we get to the return statement, what we used to be doing is builder.setResult of 1, and then return. Okay, can you spot what the race condition here is? Yeah. When we did builder.setResult, it told this guy that the task had finished,
okay.
And so it marked this task as completed. That meant that what came after the await statement in the caller could now execute.
Mm.
Well, it marked it, maybe that executed on a separate thread, and we executed the finally block only much later. The way we fixed this up is to have, actually we borrowed a play from Visual Basic's book. We had an implicit return variable. In the return statement, it doesn't do this. Instead, return temp equals 1, and it doesn't return. It has a go to exit. When it goes to exit, I suppose the original try finally block will still have been there. So it will still, the go to exit statement will execute the body. Finally, the exit can do builder.setResult of temp. Yeah, and the VB users are thinking that's familiar because all VB methods already have an implicit local variable. That's what we're doing here.
Hmm. Excellent.
What else have we changed that's important for people to know? One thing that's important is that async methods very often are going to be long-running. I mean, you wouldn't use them unless they were long-running. And you should be wondering what happens to garbage collection in that case.
Yes. In fact, I asked Mads in an interview that we had where he gave us the high-level overview of this. Mm-hmm. People that watched that, remember that we said we would talk to Lucien about this.
Fantastic.
So right on. Talk to us about that.
I'm going to talk to you with more code.
Okay, great.
Let's suppose inside my async method, I declared a variable equals new object. Maybe it's some costly object. This variable will be lifted into the state machine. Inside the move next, it will initialize it. That means that this variable will remain live from the perspective of garbage collector right the time up until the class itself has been garbage collected. That's vaguely similar to a regular method, where when you invoke a regular method, the variable remains live up until the scope of the method is finished. It's a bit... Well, let's actually talk a bit further about that. If this is long-running, and this was costly, and we no longer needed it after a certain point, it would be kind of neat to null it out, to free it up for garbage collection.
Yeah.
So we could actually do that. X equals null. If we do that, that will translate into a statement, this.x equals null. And so at this point, it will no longer be a live reference. The garbage collector can free it. That's mostly good enough, but there were some issues with that that we've now addressed in the CTP. I'm going to erase this because I want to zoom in on a different statement for the moment.
Okay.
I want to zoom in on the await statement. How do we translate the await statement? Users of the old CTP, if they were advanced users, will have gone into detail about how this is exactly translated. They'll have read that we translated it into, of course this is all inside the move next method. Temp equals t dot get awaiter if temp dot begin await of move next, then return, and there was a label here, and then it said temp dot end await. So it used to be that it was divided into three calls: get awaiter, begin await, end await. This variable temp was implicitly generated by the compiler to handle the await statement. The user's code never has any access to it. The user had no way of nulling out this field. That could be leaks for garbage collection purposes. What we've done is we are now nulling it out. I'm sorry, I should have declared quite clearly that the temp is lifted into the state machine, so it was going to persist. So what we've done is we implicitly clear it out. And that way you can rest safe in the knowledge that you are under control of all of the temporaries and lifetimes in your code. If they take too long for garbage collection, you can deal with it using this nulling out trick.
Okay.
When I get into this, we've actually changed this pattern quite radically. People who really need to know about this are the people who are implementing awaitability on their own types. That's a really powerful technique. I used it a lot. I made it in my programs, and it's inside one of the samples, I think the paddle game sample in the CTP. So you could say await button one click, and that way it would just wait until the button had been clicked. It's a kind of new paradigm programming for PB and C#. And in order to support that kind of thing, I needed to implement the awaitability of my type, whatever it is. That, in the past, meant implementing getAwaiter, beginAwait, and endAwait. What we discovered as we worked through it was that this triple set of methods forced inefficiencies. I'm going to tell you what the inefficiencies are, and then I'll tell you how we've improved it to avoid them. The first inefficiency is that we're passing a delegate to the beginAwait function. What we're thinking in the future it might be is that async is kind of like the zombie virus. It infects you, right? Mm-hmm. Any of your friends has got it, it infects you, it infects the next bit. It's going to be like that in people's programs. They're going to start using async in just one part, because I think, oh, this might take longer, but then the caller will become async, and the caller and the caller, and soon the whole thing will become async. Except most of the time, the async methods will return immediately. We don't want there to be too much overhead. We want to minimize the overhead in the case where the async method returns immediately. This didn't really allow it, because just the cost of passing the delegate all of the time really is quite heavy. Delegates are costly objects. What we changed it to was this. Temp equals t dot get awaiter. This is still exactly the same. If it's not yet completed, then t dot on completed of move next return label for the continuation. Of course, once the task has been completed, it will invoke the delegate that we passed it, and that through the state machine magic will jump to the label. It will jump back here, and then finally we can do temp.getResult. Temp equals null. Let's think about what the performance of this will be in the fast case.
Okay.
In the fast case, the test will bypass all of this junk and it will go straight down to calling getResult. That means that we can defer a whole lot of work in the slow case. Let me tell you about what some of the work is.
Okay.
This thing that I'm going to talk about is not implemented in the CTP. It's going to be implemented in the release version, but it was just too complicated to transpose into the CTP. Let's suppose I have a statement which says, for instance, var a equals f. No, let's call it something else. G plus await t. The way this should work is it should evaluate g first, and after that it should do the await statement. If we're thinking about what IL it generates, it should push a call. In fact, it should just do the call to g. The result will be on the stack. And after it's on the stack, then it should do the await statement, the various expansion of the await statement. That means that in order to handle the await statement, it needs to have the ability to push everything on the stack. Mm. We call this spilling. The reason in particular is we get to the return statement, and you're never allowed to return if there are things on the stack. So actually the machinery is quite complicated. Inside here, we have to spill the entire stack. And inside here, we have to restore the entire stack. Now, put your concurrency hat on and think about possible race conditions. In the old pattern, if we passed this move next delegate, it and then we tried to spill in here, it's possible that the guy who we were awaiting could execute the move next delegate even before we spilled. That would be a race condition. So in the old pattern, we'd have had to pessimistically spill beforehand. Mm. And then unspill. Okay, that would have been a disaster. We didn't like that. At least with the new pattern, the spilling and unspilling is only in the slow path where it hasn't yet completed. So what that means is that anyone who's implementing awaitability on their own types is going to have to change from begin await and end await to this triple pattern of is completed, uncompleted, and get result. The general behaviors are the same. The object that's returned from getAwaiter has to have these three things as instance methods. They can no longer be extension methods. Discompleted has to be a property, and they have to take exactly the correct parameters, so don't do anything fancy.
Interesting.
Those were some of the fixes. I wanted to mention just a few other fixes that we'd made to code generation. Code generation, I tell you why I'm focusing on code generation, because if you're going to use the async CTP on the as-is license, and you want to have good confidence that you're using it in a safe way, the most important thing is that the code that's generated doesn't have mysterious bugs in it. We fixed up a bunch of them. What were the bugs that we fixed? All of the bugs were kind of weird cases. That's why we didn't fix them in the first CTP. And I'm just going to mention to you what they are to give you a feeling of the kind of work we do to do this. In VB, if you had a select case statement, select case I, in a method sub f of I as long, case 1, colon, blah, 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 blah. There were very certain combinations of the type that's being selected and the various case statements which caused it to be unverifiable code.
Mm. Pretty mysterious. Mm-hmm.
There was another case in C-sharp where if you had an async method which wished to call a base property, it would generate unverifiable code. If the base property had different visibility of its getters and setters. This was actually a pre-existing C-sharp bug with lambdas and iterators. We spotted it with async, and we've fixed it in the CTP.
Cool.
Also in VB, if you had type constraints in an async method, for instance, if you were awaiting a variable whose type was a generic parameter, which was constrained to be task, then it would produce unverifiable code. Okay, we actually fixed all of the code generation bugs that we're aware of, subject to certain limitations. And I want to now, I've gone very deep in here. I want to step back to a higher level and talk about which code constructs you should avoid if you want to use async safely.
Great.
Let's take a fresh start. You know, I should probably have started the talk with these things before going into the detail, but...
Well, and I should have gotten your name right, so that's just the way things happen, man. It's great. It's great to... This is a good way to go. Come back up out of the rabbit hole, talk about the higher level, and then maybe we'll go back down again.
Yeah.
Rock and roll.
Var x equals f plus await t. What I've already told you before is that it gets the order of evaluation wrong in this case. In fact, the order of evaluation it does is as if it had the following pseudocode. Var temp expression equals await t. Var x equals f plus temp expression. Actually, I should put some bite into it. Let's suppose T were a method that we executed. Then it's very clear that we're executing the method T before that. You might think to yourself, well, I could live just with a different order of side effects if I'm not being concerned about order of side effects. But I tell you now, there are code generation bugs in some weird scenarios which rest upon this kind of order, nested awaits inside larger expressions. Mm. What are the safe places where people can, with real certainty, use awaits? Var x equals await any expression. this is a, I think this is a really good safe way that we've tested the heck out of. Using x equals weight expression. Tested a lot of this. If I invoke a method with an await argument, we've tested this a lot. If I try to do something fancy, some expression here which might have side effects, or maybe there are some other arguments prior to the await statement, there were known bugs, which we fixed up in the release thing, but they involved major rewrites to major parts of the compiler that we have not been able to port to the CTP. So avoid this kind of thing. Stick to the simpler cases.
Okay.
In VB, if await E1 and also await E2, then blah blah blah. Actually, there's a parser bug where this doesn't even parse. We got the wrong precedence for the await operator. So this expression doesn't parse in VB, and in C#, it has potential of incorrect order, maybe incorrect cogen down the line, because it is one of these complicated things with await inside a nested expression. Hmm.
So, I mean, even though the, I mean, semantically, you have one await clearly expressed before the other, if you're reading left to right.
Yeah.
So could you, I mean, could you refresh my memory, essentially, why that creates the problem that it does? I understand under certain weird circumstances, but since you're parsing it from left to right, up and down and left to right, right? Isn't that what how we would parse this text? Can you explain that just a little bit for people who might want to get a better sense of why that would be the case?
So the question is, why did we get this? Why is this not parsing correctly in
PB?
The answer is, the way it parses it is as if there were parentheses around there. That sounds stupid. It thinks that await is a very low precedence operator, and it thinks that and also is a higher precedence operator, so it just...
Got it. Understood.
And actually, since we knew that there were the underlying bugs and we wanted to steer people clear of them, the actual order of precedence never matters in the cases that we recommend more clearly.
Agreed. And now I'm going to zoom in on those again. So we use these. Not that one. These three. Yeah.
Let's talk about some other things that are to do with the code that you write that are not in the CTP. I'm going to raise all this again.
Cool.
I'm saying this by way of letting people know that when they write code with the async CTP, even though we've given the as-is license, they should expect that they'll have to do certain changes when they upgrade to the next version of Visual Studio. Overload resolution. This has been a really thorny issue. We have really had a lot of subtle bugs about this, and we've had to change the language specifications of VB and C# to accommodate new scenarios around this. Let's say I have a few different overloads of task.run. One overload takes an action as task. Another overload, I just realized that I'm writing half in VB and half in C#. I hope the viewers will be understand what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm going to write out all four overloads of task.run. And then I'm going to tell you what each of them does and why this doesn't work as it should in the CTP. It's starting to look complicated, but actually, with the changes we've made in the final version, it starts to become usable more naturally. So, these overloads will exist in the framework, and users will be able to do something like await task.run of, let's say, a pose in C#. They could write a delegate, which does some work, and it has a return statement. The overload and type inference system will recognize that this is not an async delegate, so it's going to choose between the first two overloads, and it will infer that t is an integer, so it will pick the second overload and return a task of integer. Let's suppose I did await task.run with an async delegate. I just wrote delegate here. I could have written it using the lambda syntax.
Exactly, yeah. It would have saved you a couple characters. Plus, I like the arrow. It's cool. Equal sign, greater than.
Okay.
In this case, what it should do is see that it's an async delegate, and therefore it will prefer these overloads that have func of task return types. And it should see that because it's an async delegate, it should dig all the way in and pick this particular overload and infer that t is an integer. Well, let's step back and ask, why is this important? These should have quite different behaviors. The behavior of this is that we're awaiting until this synchronous code is finished and it will return 5. That means we occupy one thread in the thread pool that will be solely dedicated to this work until it's finished.
Okay.
What this one means is that we want to start some work on a thread in a thread pool, and it will do the first chunk of work on that thread. When it comes to the await point, it will surrender the thread to anyone else who wants to use it in the thread pool. Once the await is finished, it will come back in the thread pool, maybe on a different thread in the thread pool, who cares, who knows, and it will finish, and eventually it will return the answer. This feels like a common scenario, maybe because you don't want to block up the thread pool, maybe because you're using an API where the synchronous version doesn't work and you're forced to use the asynchronous version, who knows. We really want people to think that delegates and async delegates are pretty much interchangeable. They can use either one at will. What happens in the current CTP? I have no idea, actually. I believe it picks this one, but infers t equals task of integer. Or maybe it just gives an error message of some sort. I can't remember. But what was very clear was that overload resolution and type inference did not work in the CTP. This, unfortunately, is going to limit the kinds of generic methods and overloads that people can write. We know that people are going really crazy with overloads. What can we do about this? Well, in the CTP, we actually renamed this last one X, just to distinguish it very clearly. And users are going to have to explicitly supply the type argument when they invoke it if they want to get the right thing.
How's
actually
that?
I flagged this precisely as something that I wanted to raise.
Okay.
The question is, when people write code using the async CTP and eventually they want to upgrade to the final version of Visual Studio, what will they have to change? We really tried to make it very clear what would break. Mm-hmm. That's why in the CTP we call, well, it's one of the reasons why we called it task X dot whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, task X won't exist in the final version. Every single place they used it will be a compile error. They'll have to change it. Much of the time, it will just be a case of renaming it. And as you just said, task X dot run X. The work will be to remove that and to remove that.
Totally.
There are some other things, you know. The CTP doesn't even support a whole bunch of async lambdas. It doesn't support expression lambdas. Mm. Those will be in the final product.
Cool.
Where might those come in?
Yeah.
You know, it's a difficult question of how link and async would work together. And we know that link is built upon expression lambdas. Mm-hmm. In the product, expression lambdas will be there, and that means you can at least invoke the link methods, even though you can't use the link syntax.
Okay.
I wanted to just run through my list of things that we haven't got there. I talked about the order of evaluation that's incorrect. Oh, one major one, contextual keywords. In the CTP, await and async are fully reserved words. You can't use them for identifiers or anything else.
Okay.
In the final product, you will be able to use them as identifiers in unambiguous cases. Mm. It was a lot of work to do. I actually checked. We had 200 bugs in our initial implementation of it that we've fixed over the past 6 months.
Wow.
You can imagine that was why we didn't put it into the CTP.
Sure.
What other areas? Task X I've talked about. Overload resolution and type inference of async things I've talked about. Debugging. There's no debugging support in the async CTP. What you find is what you get. IntelliSense, generate from usage, all of the wonderful IDE features are not in the async CTP. I haven't spoken much about them because they don't affect the quality of your code.
Agreed. No, but that's a great point, because the way that the process works is you guys add new features to your language. Mm-hmm. That means the Visual Studio people, the IDE people, have to then, you know, implement things to support the things that you implemented in your language, which of course is going to be IntelliSense, debugging, etc., etc. And of course you'll help them along those ways to some degree. But that's a good point. The CTP is in some sense a focused chunk of functionality that you're getting into my hands quickly that, you know, is sort of not bound to the IDE itself, because I'm not using the CTP to have IntelliSense. I'm using it to see what the heck you guys did with the programming language.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a great point that you brought that up, because I have seen people ask about, there's no IntelliSense. Well, hasn't been implemented yet, man. And that's part of Visual Studio.
Absolutely. And a good way of thinking about it is if you restrict yourself to the limited uses of async that I talked about, and your code is correct, then it will behave correctly. There are a large class of incorrect programs where we haven't yet specified the behavior. There's an important thing that I actually missed that I should have done near the start of the talk.
Okay.
I prioritized my mind. Let's talk about void async methods.
Yes.
These have been a big bone of contention. We've had so many language design meetings. We've gone back and forth. Why did we even include void methods? Let's write them out. Void async void f. How is that different from async task f? I mean, the body of the code's probably the same. It has no return statements. Mm-hmm. Let's write them out in VB as well, because I wanted to talk about VB. How is it different between async sub f and async function f as task? Let's talk about one of the key changes that we've made in this refresh of the CTP. Let's suppose that inside the method, there had been an exception thrown. Where does that exception go? In this case, where it was task returning, it's very clear where the exception goes. The exception gets caught and bottled up inside the resultant task.
Mm-hmm.
And you can check whether it's got the exception. If you await it, it will rethrow the exception. In the case of async void methods, there's nowhere for us to put the exception. What should happen? Should it crash the program? Well, I certainly hope not. I'll tell you what the CTP used to do in the first release, and then I'll tell you how it's changed. Let's make this real, where we've got async void button one click. Maybe it invoked some subsidiary async. No, let's not yet. Let's say it had... Let's suppose it invoked one piece of code and then it awaited another piece of code. The way it used to work is that inside an async method, if the exception had been thrown in the synchronous course of affairs before we had yet started awaiting anything, then the exception would be propagated up to the caller. It would have been like normal synchronous invocation. However, if the same method happened to throw an exception after the await statement, well, it can no longer go back to the caller. It has to go somewhere. And it used to go back to the synchronization context. It used to post a delegate who throws the exception onto the current synchronization context.
Okay.
That's kind of difficult to reason about. And remember, I talked about the fast path. I talked about is completed as a shortcut path to save work if it's not needed. Well, that means that when you look at an await statement, you can't actually tell if it's taken the fast path or not. You can't tell or reason about if this is going to be thrown to the caller or to the synchronization context. The answer we came up with is that every single exception that's thrown anywhere inside an async void method will post it to the caller's synchronization context. Let's talk about some other things with void async methods. Right at the moment that an async method, void method starts, it gets the current synchronization context and it calls operation started. Right at the end, any way it exits, if it exits through a return statement or falling off the end or exception, it will call sc.operationCompleted. That's always been the case, but I just want to flag everyone's attention to the fact that void returning asyncs are really very different beasts from task returning asyncs because of the synchronization context stuff, because of always throwing the exception to the caller's synchronization context.
Mm.
And let's think about where we would use void or task returning ones. Well, void, if you have an async void method or an async sub which throws an exception, then your caller has been disempowered. Your caller can never catch that exception apart from through the synchronization context. That's pretty rough. We really don't encourage it. We think it would be a good programming idiom if you use task returning asyncs for the body of your code, and you only use async voids where you have to, like the button one click case, where it doesn't matter that the exception gets thrown to the calling synchronization context. Mm-hmm. Because in a WinForms or WPF application, that does exactly the right thing of popping the unhandled exception up to the caller. Of course, you could always put your own try block and catch all exceptions yourself to avoid them going up to the calling synchronization context, and that's very valid.
Mm-hmm.
Let's extend that. Let's say if ever you have an async void, You should either be in a case where you know that it's okay for exceptions to be thrown to the synchronization context, or you should catch all the exceptions yourself in some way or another.
Makes sense.
Let's see, did I have anything else I wanted to talk about? Late bound. The CTP does not support late bound awaits. In C sharp, dynamic D equals something or other, await D. Obviously, we want this. We're proud of the dynamic feature. In Visual Basic, dim O as object, await O. It all works. It will work in the final product, how you expect, but in the CTP, it just gives a compile time error. Unsafe code. The CTP actually didn't even get onto this. In the final product, it will be possible to mix async and unsafe code.
Wow. Okay.
Can your head go quickly enough to figure out which cases are safe and which cases are unsafe of mixing async and unsafe?
I can't. Yeah, that's going to be quite challenging. So, can we talk about that briefly?
Yeah.
Perfect. So, unsafe, keyword, open your block, do some unsafe stuff. Use pointers, you know, call out into the native world. That to me is a really interesting problem space that you would have to deal with if I then also throw in some safe stuff. In this case, let's await, async await something inside of that world.
Yeah. Let's erase some of this so I can focus just on the unsafe bit of it. An async task returning method, and I want to have an unsafe block and then await T and then another unsafe block. Remember what I said earlier, that where everything essential to this async state machine var x, let's have a variable declared in here,
void
star x equals something or other,
uh-huh.
And let's have another one, var y equals something or other. Remember that all local variables are lifted into the state machine as fields.
Okay.
Well, it would have to lift the void star x as a field of the state machine. That's not allowed. Of course, it's impossible to have a field of an unsafe prototype like this. And actually, it wasn't needed.
Okay.
Why was it not needed? It's because the rule we said was that inside this unsafe block, we're not allowed to have an await statement. Therefore, we will never need to save the value of this to be restored after an await statement, and therefore we'd simply never need to declare that field, and it just works. The actual rule in the compiler is that unsafe and await can be mixed so long as the mixing would never require unsafe variables to be lifted.
Okay.
So, you're going to get a lot of flexibility in how to write your unsafe code in C# without having to go to C++, just as long as you obey some simple hygiene things like this.
Okay.
And they're not difficult to work with, it felt like. It will never look quite as beautiful as it could, because you will sort of have to be pulling out the await, but that's where it is.
Makes sense. Cool.